Welcome to Pardes Parsha Podcast with Rav Landis, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. I'm Nechama Malkiel, a Pardes student and your host for today. It's a beautiful fall day in Jerusalem. We are in the beginning of the month of Mar Cheshvan, the one Jewish month without holidays. We look forward to learning some Torah with you today. Thank you for tuning in. Today's shiur concerns Parshat Lech Lecha, the beginning of the epic story of Avraham and Sarah. A couple of brief announcements, and then we'll turn it over to Rabbi Landis. Your participation and feedback is vital for the success of the podcast series. Please send us comments on the episode, where you live, and how you heard about us. Send your email to podcast@pardesusa.org. Thank you. There is a handout sheet available for this podcast. It's optional, but helpful. It's available via www.pardes.org.il/podcast or /podcast if you live in the US, in the UK. That's it. And now, Rav Landis, the director and Rosh Yeshiva of the Pardes Institute. Rav Landis.
Thank you, and it's a wonderful time to be able to study Torah with you. Lech Lecha, we're at, go forth, we're at the very beginning of the Abraham and Sarah epic. In fact, at the very beginning of the epic, as you well know, they are called by their original names, Avram and Sarai. They haven't gone through their transformation as of yet. And in this parsha, which is just packed with the changes, the thrills, the chills, the challenges that the two meet, and the tensions between the two that continue for not only this week, but for the next, when I say week, I'm referring to the weekly portion, not just this week's portion, but the next several weeks' portion, really commences here and commences with full force. What I'd like to look with you today is a section here at the end of Lech Lecha, at the end of the portion, that takes place when Avraham is 99 years old. 99 years old. And this is after we've had as I said, many activities and covenantal bonding between Avram himself and Sarai, a covenantal bonding with God regarding themselves and their future. They are promised to be the progenitors of a nation which will be a blessing not only for themselves, but a blessing for all other nations. And here at the end, Avram is 99 years old. God appears to him and says to him, announces his presence, I am El Shaddai, I am the Lord, the powerful Lord. Kitalech lefanai ve'yetamim. Avram, I want you to walk in front of me, and I wish you to be perfect. Here we have it already. The desire for Jewish perfection. The notion tamim is a perfection of a certain type. It's a perfection of an integration, of a completeness, of a way of being that is not discontinuous. As we say in Hebrew, the rabbi said, Echad b'lev, v'echad b'peh, v'echad b'masa, that one should be the same and consistent in their heart and in their thought and their speaking and in their action. And that's ve'etamim. That's the type of perfection that Avram is asked to have. And God renews once again this covenant that I'll have between myself and between you. I will increase you. I will make you fruitful. Ma'od, ma'od, very, very much. Avram, as he's called, falls on his face. And God continues to speak to him. I have my covenant with you, and you will be the father of many nations. And you will not be called anymore Avram, but your name shall be Avraham. That's kind of a play on words. Avraham, Av Hamon Goyim Netaticha. And if you've seen the word Avraham, you kind of have to do it a little bit of an East Coast accent, and more of a Boston accent, in which all of a sudden you drop your resh, and Av Hamon Goyim, the father of a multitude of nations. There is the repetition, once again, of fruitfulness and of all the greatness that will come from you. What can God possibly demand from Avraham, as he will be called, in return? And he now tells him a few verses later, after these great promises. And God says to Avraham, you must preserve this covenant, you and the seed that comes after you. And this is the covenant, this is the briti, this is my covenant which you shall preserve between myself and between you, that you shall circumcise the flesh of orlatchem, the flesh of your foreskin, and this should be a token, an oath, of my covenant, of a covenant between me and between you. And this is the task, this is the thing which is asked from Avraham. In fact, to such a degree that when we say the word brit, or we say the word in Ashkenazic Yiddish pronunciation, bris, we immediately assume the action of brit milah, the action of circumcision. As it says in verse 13, himol yimol yilid beitzcha, you shall certainly or surely circumcise the children of your household. And it becomes synonymous. Even though the word brit is a term that's used very often in the Hebrew Bible, it's always in reference to the covenant. The full term is brit milah, is the circumcision covenant, or the covenant of circumcision. But it's become so synonymous, just the word itself, brit, gives forth with this very physical way of being part of the Jewish people. The emphasis is here, and we have many questions and many demands, this earthly, fleshy circumcision. What is the demand here? Why particularly this demand? How is it understood within Jewish tradition? And the emphasis here is upon the, obviously, circumcision is upon the male. What does this mean for the other half of the Jewish people? What does this mean for women? And I'd like to begin this exploration by looking at how the rabbis viewed it. The rabbis' commentary upon this section. And the rabbis, we will be looking at are the rabbis of the Midrash, Midrash Rabbah. And the rabbis of Midrash Rabbah say very clearly that this is almost a surprise. How's this covenant to be done? The rabbis applied to it another verse from the Bible. You remember from our past weeks that this is how the rabbis operate. All biblical verses are considered to be connected. One verse somehow, even from a very distant place, can have and unlock and be the key to the verse that you are looking in question. And they quote a verse from Hosea, from the minor prophets, Kanavim bamidbar matzati Yisrael, kivikura b'teina bereshita, which translates as, I found Israel like grapes in the wilderness. I saw your fathers as the first ripe in the fig tree at her season. And Rabbi Yudin says, at first the fruit of a fig tree is gathered one by one, then two by two, then three by three, until eventually they are gathered in baskets and with shovels. In other words, the way the fig tree grows, the way it comes out, the way it ripens one by one, and then it starts increasing its yield. It's not like you wake up one day and the entire fig tree is covered with figs. And they say, even so, at the beginning, Avraham was one. Abraham was a singular, unique person. It wasn't easy to convince too many people to circumcise themselves. But then eventually were able to grow. Then there was Avraham and Isaac. And then Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Then the three forefathers. Until eventually, as we see in Exodus, and the children of Israel were fruitful, increased abundantly, and multiplied. And they all eventually achieved circumcision. Rabbi Yudin has another comment of why this imagery of fig. Just as a fig contains nothing inedible save its stalk. In other words, you can eat the entire fig, but there's just a little piece of the fig, you know, the stalk part. But with its removal, even this defect ceases. When you take off the uksa, you take off the stalk, the defect is no longer there. So God says to Abraham, there is nothing unworthy in thee save thy foreskin. Remove it and your blemish ceases. In other words, what it says at the very beginning of the verse, walk before me and be thou whole. It means I want a certain type of walk, Avraham. I want you to have this perfect walk, ve'etamim. And here the tamim, which we refer to as being perfection, a perfection of bodily and spiritual integration, is understood by the rabbis to mean exactly this type of notion of circumcision. Get rid of this little piece that is lost. This is a Jewish rabbinic understanding, which is opposed to the Greeks, in which the body is not considered to be the be-all and end-all. The body is not considered to be perfect in and of itself. And even if it has perfection, it's not the perfection that we're looking at. Yes, we came to the beginning of Genesis, and God looked at his creation and said it was good. And he understood the creation to be very good. You do not have in Judaism a abhorrence of the body. But at the same time, you don't have within Judaism a raising of the body to a perfection that the body is the beginning and end all of everything that's important. What you have here is a desire for a social and moral correction. Within Greek society, circumcision was considered to be mutilation. Why would you change the body? Why would you show yourself in any event to renounce the perfection which is already there within nature? And for those Jews who went to the gymnasium, and the gymnasium where people were fully unclothed and did their sport and their exercises, to be Jewish was to be highly embarrassed. The experience the Jews had for thousands of years, young males had for thousands of years, and many older Jews could say about the first time that they were in a shower with Gentiles and the embarrassment, the discovery that they were different is brought forth from this very verse. And here the Midrash continues. Avram was 90 years old, which is 99 years old. And the Midrash asked the question, why should not have circumcised himself at the age of 48? Because according to how we do the chronology of Avram's life, it was the age of 48 was when he became the monotheist. We discovered his creator. If you say that for some reason, milah, the circumcision, is an act of making sure of the covenant, why is it that it was not at an earlier point when he first discovers God and he convinces himself? So the Midrash has an interesting answer. Well, at that point, Avraham was increasing the tribe not through having his own children, but he was increasing the monotheists by bringing into him converts. And if one would say that the initiation into Judaism included within it circumcision, he was discouraged proselytes at that time. Then, the Midrash continues, why not be circumcised at the age of 85 when God spoke with him? And the section that we had just done a little bit earlier in Lech Lecha, when he spoke with him at the covenant between the pieces. And the answer is, well, at that point, it was not yet the point in which Isaac was going to be born. And this circumcision immediately precedes the birth of Isaac. And once we have the birth of Isaac, we want a full covenantal experience. Avraham was understood in the Midrash as reacting to this command with great being startled, in fact, being upset. And Avraham asks a very good question. The Midrash puts these words in his mouth. Avraham asks, if circumcision is so precious, Why did you give it to Adam? So the Holy One, blessed be He, said to him, Let it suffice thee that I and thou are in the world. If thou wilt not undergo circumcision, it is enough for my world to have existed until now. And it is enough for uncircumcision, the status of not being circumcised, to have existed until now. And it is enough for circumcision to have been forlorn and by itself into this present point. In other words, God says, you don't understand. This act of circumcision is an act of complete bonding. It's your sacrifice. It's the moment in which we become joined, that just as you make yourself distinct within the world, so too you make my presence known within the world. Both of us become one within the world, one in the sense of being singular and individual, and one being bonded together. But Avram continues, according to the Midrash, and Avram fights back against God. Before I circumcised myself, men came and joined me in my new faith, just like the Midrash earlier said, why he would not circumcise himself at an earlier point. People would join and would believe in the one God. Will they come and join me when I am circumcised? What the rabbis seem to be reflecting here is actually the competition that they felt at their particular time. The competition with the new religion of Christianity, a religion that had a monotheistic goal, even though it had a different interpretation of monotheism. And one of the first things that Paul made sure took place, and it was a very good marketing ploy, is to get rid of this physical circumcision, this circumcision of the flesh. It turned out to be a very good marketing ploy. It became an easier way of coming into monotheism. And so here the rabbis project the same question back to Avram. Before I circumcised myself, others came and joined me within this faith which you're going to call Judaism. Will they come and join me when I'm uncircumcised? Avram said God to him, Let it suffice thee that I am thy God. Let it suffice thee that I am thy patron. And not only for thee alone, but it's sufficient for my world that I am its God and its patron. God says back to him, We're going to take the hard road. We're going to take the road of sacrifice. We're going to take the road of renunciation. We're going to take the road of a lonely road. I'm going to demand much from you. And if we go this road and it's only the two of us, then it'll only be the two of us. But this is the road I say before you. We have here, according to the Midrash, kind of a contradiction. We have, on one hand, God saying to him, you will be the father of a multitude of nations. You'll be father of a great nation. You'll be a great nation in history. But God's first real demand from him is a demand which, on the face of it, is something extraordinarily hard to promote, extremely hard to market. The rabbis speak of this. And why this particular mitzvah, why this particular aspect that makes us so distinct, why this particular notion? For the rabbis, the notion of the hard road is the notion of the road that will work. The road that really works in the end, that makes it worthwhile, is the road that demands much, not little. That demands the ability to stand apart. It's the notion that Lech Lecha, when you go forth, you're not going forth for an earthly reward, but you're going forth for a transformation, and the transformation needs to be complete. But why this particular mitzvah? Why this particular notion? Rabbi Nathan said in Rabbi Acha's name, and Rabbi Bracha said in Rabbi Isaac's name, and this continues the verse, I am El Shaddai, I am God Almighty. The word El Shaddai, which when we are not teaching, and it's one of God's name, we will say it in a form of pronunciation that reflects its holiness. We say Kael Shakai. But the word itself, El, means God All-Powerful, and the word Shaddai seems to be the magnification of that power. But the rabbis see a play on this word, Shaddai. Shin Dalad Yud. Shaddai. It is I, the rabbis say, who said to my world, die. Die is like the very famous song from the Seder that everyone knows, Dayenu. It's enough. It suffices. Die means enough. I am the God who says enough. El Shaddai. It is I who said to my world, die, enough. And had I not said die, if I had not said enough to my world, the heaven would still have been spreading and the earth would have gone on expanding to this very day. This is a very deep and important teaching which comes to the secret of the Brit Milah. The notion of Brit Milah is the notion of God the creator, God the expander, God who brings an infinite world into being, a world that seems to just expand without ceasing. And this God, who is the role model for all humans, because we as human beings, we create. That is the essential part of the essential nature of who we are. We create in all sorts of mechanical ways and all sorts of informational ways. We create as we write a poem, we create as we construct a hymn, as we have music, as we erect buildings. This is very much part of our humanness, which is in the image of God. But God himself says, I'm also El Shaddai. I say to many things in the world, it's enough. You have to know your limits and you have to know your limitations. The rabbis and their understanding see the mitzvah Brit Milah, circumcision of the flesh, as a notion of limitation. It's a notion of a God who says, this is a world that will not constantly expand. This notion of creation that cannot be unceasing. We see this in our weekly life with the creation of Shabbat. This creation, I say this almost with quotation marks, the creation of Shabbat. With Shabbat that we saw in the very first beginning of Bereishit is a time that God rested. The word Shabbat is to rest. In modern Hebrew, Shabbat means to strike. You strike and you say, enough. It's time to rest. It's time to consider other things. We're on strike right now. And so when we have Shabbat, we say, this world doesn't belong only to ourselves. 6 days you shall work. 6 days you shall create. 6 days you do melacha, which is active and formative and necessary creation. We create for 6 days of the week, and indeed we are commanded to create. In fact, according to Jewish tradition, one is not allowed to be retired. One must work 6 days during the week. One must add to the creation of society. One must be positive. One must do these acts of creation. But on the Shabbat, we say enough, sufficient. It's time to rest. There is a God. There is other things to think about. Creation has to cease. And that is the social creation of Shabbat. The notion of Brit Milah is this physical creation, which is going to be physical restriction, I should say, that God places. And this is part of the rabbinic understanding and its rabbinic view of man. And here I say by man, I refer to man, the gender man, which the rabbis have appreciation for, but also in many ways, much suspicion. The rabbis are in the forefront of advocating a positive notion of sexuality. The mitzvah of Peru Urvu, the mitzvah of being fruitful and multiply, is a commandment which extends in full force during one's life, but it's also, and it's a mitzvah that's contingent upon a man, but it's a mitzvah at the same time which is understood to be a bracha. How can it not be better than that? It's a mitzvah which is supposed to imply within it the mitzvah of onah, of giving pleasure and sexual enjoyment to one's wife. There is a full theology of this type of mitzvah, and that's on one side, and the balance on the other side is die. Enough. It's not all about your own pleasure. It's not only about yourself. It's not there just so that you will create other people in your own image. It's not there just so that you fulfill yourself. It's not there just so that you have your own pleasure. And for the rabbis, the mitzvah of physical circumcision is the circumcision of the flesh, is to say we respect sexuality and we know of its own dangers. We know that it can lead to abuse. We know that it can lead to egocentrism. And the rabbinic understanding of circumcision is the God of El Shaddai saying to the man, know your limitations. The mitzvah of circumcision has been a mitzvah which has defined male identity within the Jewish community. To the degree that if one is not circumcised, one suspects in oneself that one is not fully Jewish. If one is not circumcised by one's father or guardian, then the community is supposed to make sure that circumcision is available to all. And if that can't take place, then once one achieves his own majority, then one must make sure that they circumcise themselves. The act of circumcision, then, is an act, it's a positive act, it's a mitzvah to say, it's an act that takes upon oneself some sacrifice, it's an act which takes upon oneself a certain measure of tension. Consider the jokes that sometimes one hears and the laughter, but also the kind of which comes out of this positive tension that one sees when one's at a Brit Milah. And so therefore it has this reflective act. On one hand, it's a positive act, one that's an act of great decision, and at the same and joining the community, at the same time it's an act in which one's what's imposed upon one is the act, is the notion of limitation and restraint. One of the great challenges within Judaism is how to restrain male ego and male sexuality. As I come to the end, I have not discussed what does this mean for the other half, as I said, and any way that I'll express it, I don't mean to express it, the term, in any form which separates the Jewish people. And I'd like to say the following. The creation of Zevet Habat, and Simchat Habat, of naming ceremonies for Jewish women, is also a reflection of this week's Parsha. It comes not just as a reaction, not only, although it's been positively impacted upon by Jewish feminism, but started many, many years ago, and it comes directly from our Parsha, from the continuation. God continues to speak and says, regarding Sarai, Lo tikra et shema Sarai, her name will no longer be called Sarai, ki Sarah shema, because her name is Sarah. And with the name Sarah, this completion of name, this notion of majesty within her name, becomes the center of her identity. The transformation that takes place when a name is conferred from a baby to a named individual, the transformation takes place when a person who never had a Jewish name, but later on confers upon herself a Jewish name, is considered to be a complete and special Jewish notion of transformation. The rabbis in later generations needed to find, and I think this welled up within the people as a whole, needed a way to affirm the coming into Jewish society of Jewish women in the same way as Jewish men. With Jewish men, as we spoke, there was a fear of curbing unwanted and unneeded expression of power, and therefore the El Shaddai is here. Vayomer Elohim El Avraham, Sarai Ishtacha Lo Tikra Et Shema, Sarai Ki Sarah Shema. Here it's the universal God who says regarding Sarai that her name now is Sarah. It's not the God of power, but it's the God whose name is used in the creation of the universe. It's the universal God. It's the God who along with first Adam, named all creatures. It's the God who says, Sarai will now become Sarah in all future generations. She will also achieve her own name, Uverachti Ota, and she will achieve her blessing, Vegam Natati Mimena, and all things will be given from her. So we're at the beginning of Jewish creation. The story's not over. It will continue next week. And I hope to be there to be learning with you.
Thank you, Rabbi Landes. Please tell your friends about this podcast series, and please let us know your thoughts and comments. Send us email via podcast@pardesusa.org. The producer of this episode is Robbie Grossman. Shalom and goodbye from Jerusalem.